In the afternoon of September 11, 1997, Charlotte Femiano, a 40-year-old realtor and beloved mother and wife, went to meet with a potential home buyer at a secluded residence in Lower Saucon Township, Pennsylvania. When she didn't return home that night, her husband reported her missing. The next morning, she was found brutally murdered in the home she was supposed to show. It's been 26 years since Charlotte was killed, and investigators are still searching for the person responsible. Hey everyone, welcome back to Detective Perspective. My name is Derek Levasseur. I'm a licensed private investigator and former police detective, and each week I'll be covering an unsolved case in story format. I'll then give you my perspective on the investigation and provide contact information for the individuals or organizations connected to the case so that if you have any tips, you can contact them directly and maybe you can help solve a case. So if you're someone who's interested in true crime, specifically unsolved cases, and you would like to hear my opinion on those investigations, please consider subscribing, whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever platform you use. Okay, so Charlotte Femiano, this is a case that I'm talking about individually, but there's a real possibility that her murder, her death, is connected to something much larger. It could be a potential serial killer that, for all we know, was never caught or may have been caught for another crime, or maybe deceased at this point. There's a lot of possibilities that could be in play here, but we're going to go through her case more specifically. I will mention some of the other cases, but when I start to get into the details of how she was killed, I think you're going to see the vulnerabilities with it, and you're going to see where a potential offender would find this scenario advantageous for them to go in there, attack their victim, and then get out without being discovered or identified. And you're going to see how, based on how easy it was, this may incentivize them to carry out this type of offense again and again and again, maybe not in the same area, but they could do this throughout the country. So I want to go over it. I think there's some lessons to be learned here, not only in this case, but also more importantly, just in general for everybody who's watching or listening to these episodes, how we can better protect ourselves and decrease the odds of being susceptible to an attack like this. Because there are ways to decrease the potential opportunities for an attacker to take advantage of a situation. So we're going to discuss that as well as the case. And at minimum, you're going to leave this episode with maybe a couple tips on how to better protect yourself. So with that out of the way, let's get into this week's case. Charlotte Christine Ettinger was born on March 24th, 1957, to parents Anna and Donald. Now, unfortunately, we don't know much about Charlotte's childhood aside from the fact that she graduated from Phillipsburg High School and Warren County Vocational Technical School. In the 1970s, Charlotte married and welcomed a daughter who she adored very much, but unfortunately, this marriage did not last long, and by the early 1980s, Charlotte was a single mother. To support herself and her daughter, she worked at a bridal shop as a sales consultant, a job she really thrived in. Charlotte was the epitome of a people person. She loved talking to everyone and helping out in any way possible. One coworker told Lehigh Valley Live that Charlotte always had a smile on her face and a kind word for everybody. She was, quote, just a true joy. Charlotte was still working as a bridal consultant when she started dating Christian Femiano. The two married in October of 1983, with Charlotte's daughter serving as the flower girl. The happy family then settled in Easton, Pennsylvania. A few years later, Charlotte decided to switch careers, but she still wanted to work in sales, so she got her real estate license and joined Weikert Realtors. Charlotte loved her new job and real estate became her passion. One coworker told The Morning Call that Charlotte was extremely successful thanks to her straightforward and enthusiastic approach to selling homes. Another colleague said, quote, she was a hard worker. She was bubbly, fun. She got back to you when you needed feedback. She was a nice lady. It was her career. She was a realtor. Charlotte quickly became one of the top realtors at her company, consistently ranking in the top 2%. She was able to achieve high levels of success, repeatedly earning membership into the company's Ambassador Club for high sales and the Million Dollar Sales Club for selling over $1 million worth of homes in just 1 year. Charlotte was so committed to her real estate career that she graduated from the Real Estate Institute and became a certified residential specialist. She earned several honors as well, including a lifetime membership into the Pennsylvania Association of Realtors Excellence Club. And in 1990, she was named Woman of the Year by the American Business Women's Association Starburst chapter. When Charlotte wasn't helping her clients find their dream homes, she was busy volunteering in the community. She helped raise money for Make-A-Wish and Habitat for Humanity, and she often worked one-on-one with the unsheltered community. By the summer of 1997, Charlotte was still at the height of her career, and during the week of September 8th, she was assigned to handle any spur-of-the-moment appointments that came into the office. Essentially, she was on call. If someone called and wanted to see a property, she was the one that would respond and meet with them. On September 10th, one of these cold calls came into the office. The potential client said they were interested in viewing a house located in the 2100 block of Chelsea Lane in Lower Saucon Township. Now, I think it's important to note that Charlotte was not the agent for this property, but it was listed by the same company she worked for. So as we go through this, the reason I'm saying that is if you're to think this was a targeted attack specifically for Charlotte, more than likely her attacker would have picked a property that she was specifically assigned to, because with this property, you really didn't know who was going to show up. Have you ever tried to break a bad habit and just felt like there was no chance of you accomplishing your goal? I've been there. It's happened to me too. But here's a breath of fresh air. Fume. It's not just about giving up. It's about switching up. And Fume takes your bad habit and simply makes it better, healthier, and a whole lot more enjoyable. Fume is an innovative, award-winning flavored air device that does just that. Instead of vapor, Fume uses flavored air. Instead of electronics, Fume is completely natural. And instead of harmful chemicals, Fume uses delicious flavors. Some of the things we choose to indulge in can be bad, but Fume is good, and it's a habit you're free to enjoy, making replacing your bad habit that much easier. Now, your Fume comes with an adjustable airflow dial and is designed with movable parts and magnets for fidgeting, giving your fingers a lot to do, which can be helpful for de-stressing and anxiety while breaking your habit. Now, I've talked about Fume and the taste before, and as I previously said, I was pleasantly surprised by the taste. I didn't expect it to be as flavorful as it was, considering it's not powered by a battery or electronics. So I expected it to be a little bit underwhelming, and that was not the case at all. The first one that I tried was orange vanilla. And to this day, although I like a few of them, it's still probably my favorite flavor. Maybe it's just because it's the first one I ever tried. I don't know, but it's like an orange creamsicle and it has this freshness to it. I don't know exactly how to explain it. It's something that you have to experience for yourself, but the taste just came off as very clean, if that makes sense. And the look is great. It's made with real wood. It has all metal parts. Sometimes you'll actually see me with my pen in my hand when I'm talking to you guys. Other times I may be out of frame playing with the Fume. And the overall aesthetic is great. It actually fits a lot of the theme going on in my studio. And if you like the look of the Fume, they also just released a magnetic stand, so there's no more losing your Fume around the house. And it's also built with fidgeting in mind. You can actually spin your Fume around while it's still on the stand. So start your year off right with a good habit by going to tryfume.com/detective and getting the journey pack today. Fume is giving my listeners and viewers of this show 10% off when you use my code DETECTIVE to help make starting the good habit that much easier. Go check them out, guys. Tryfume.com, code DETECTIVE. Now, according to the Morning Call, the Chelsea Lane house was in a secluded neighborhood situated on a 3.6-acre wooded lot. It was listed at $259,000, which would be around $500,000 today. Now, even though it wasn't her listing, Charlotte was eager to show the house, so she and the client arranged to meet for a showing at 1 p.m. the next day on September 11th. Charlotte arrived at the Chelsea Lane house at 1 p.m. on the 11th as scheduled, but the client didn't show up. After waiting for a little bit, Charlotte returned to the office thinking the client might meet her there, and almost immediately after she arrived, the client called back again, still wanting to see the house. So again, Charlotte left the office to meet them, but tragically, she was never seen alive again. Now fast forward a few hours, when Charlotte's husband Christian got home around 11:30 p.m. that night, he was surprised to find that Charlotte wasn't there. He called around asking if anyone had seen or heard from Charlotte, but they hadn't. Just before midnight, he contacted the police and reported Charlotte missing. Early the next morning, Christian reached out to Charlotte's office and learned that the last known showing was at a house on Chelsea Lane. According to the morning call, Christian then called the police and asked them to go check the house. At around 7 a.m., officers arrived at the home and discovered Charlotte's car in the driveway. After entering the house, they found Charlotte lying in a pool of blood. She was pronounced dead at the scene, and an autopsy later revealed that she had been both strangled with a ligature and shot in the head, though a sequence of events could not be determined at that time. Now, as far as the sequence is concerned, if I had to take an educated guess, just a professional opinion, I would say that more than likely she was strangled first. Being in the house with this offender, they probably put her in a position where she had her back to them, and at that point, they may have had a ligature on them. We're going to learn more about the ligature, what it may have been. It could have been something that was grabbed from the house as well, but they were able to get it around her throat, and they choked her at that point. I know they said strangled, and that could have been from the ligature marks that were found. We don't know if she was completely unconscious at that point. It could be a situation where she was, but maybe she wasn't deceased, and that's why she was shot after the fact to make sure that she was dead and she wasn't going to become a liability for the offender. But I will say this, we're going to get more into the autopsy near the end of this episode. More was revealed later on as far as the specifics of Charlotte's death. And there is something in there that's a little interesting to me as far as what went down, but we'll save that for when we get to it. Now, the local police quickly brought in the Pennsylvania State Police to take over the investigation into Charlotte's murder. During a press conference later that day, they revealed that no weapon had been recovered at the scene. They said some of Charlotte's personal items were found inside the home. However, they refused to comment on whether anything was missing. According to the morning call, the police declined to reveal what item was used to strangle Charlotte or if it had been found at the scene. They also withheld information about the caliber of the gun used, Charlotte's exact location in the house, and whether she had been sexually assaulted. The police stated they didn't have a motive or a suspect for the murder. They were looking, quote, very, very closely into Charlotte's meetings and sales calls to see if they could figure out who she was meeting at the house on the 11th. Before the end of the day, Weikert Realtors offered a $100,000 reward for information leading to the arrest and conviction of Charlotte's killer. Now, that would be nearly $200,000 in today's money, making it a pretty significant reward. Now, as you can imagine, Charlotte's husband and daughter were devastated by her murder, and they chose not to speak to the media, which is completely understandable. However, it is important to note that they fully cooperated with investigators. The news of Charlotte's murder was a complete shock to her loved ones and the entire community. She was known for being incredibly kind and helpful, and no one could think of anyone who would want to hurt her. One colleague shared to the morning call, quote, "She was a very warm person. She had a lot of enthusiasm. She would put her arm around someone and pull them into a group and make them feel comfortable. She had a lot of energy, warmth, and integrity. I would never believe that anyone would want to harm her. People wanted to be near her." Adding to the shock of Charlotte's murder was the fact that no realtor had been killed in the area before. The Weikert Realtors told the morning call that the company put a lot of emphasis on safety, encouraging realtors to meet new clients at the office first. But sometimes agents didn't follow these safety guidelines, feeling overly secure in the area, especially the upscale neighborhood where Charlotte was showing the house. Violent crime just wasn't common there. The worst that would happen would be a vandalism from time to time. Now, as you can imagine, Charlotte's murder left many in the real estate community feeling uneasy and unsure of how to proceed with house showings in the future. There was a murderer out there somewhere, and no one knew if they were safe or not. On September 16th, the police provided an update to the Philadelphia Inquirer. They said they were analyzing hair, clothing, carpet fibers, and bodily fluids that were collected from the house. Additionally, they continued to interview Charlotte's family, friends, and co-workers so that they could learn more about her personal and professional life. They emphasized that Christian had been cooperative throughout the whole process as had the homeowner of the property Charlotte was showing that day, and they also said they still didn't know if the killer was a stranger or someone who is known to Charlotte. The police went on to say that they hadn't ruled out any people or motives. They were still exploring various scenarios, including robbery, a random attack, or even a contract hit. A few days later, on September 19th, the police announced that they were also looking into whether Charlotte's murder was somehow related to the unsolved murder of Sherry Lewis in Decatur, Illinois. Now, Sherry, a 30-year-old real estate agent, was found strangled and beaten on August 5, 1994, in a vacant rural home. Now, similar to Charlotte, Sherry intended to show the house to a client she had never met before. The Pennsylvania State Police told the Herald and Review that they didn't believe the two cases were related. However, because both women were real estate agents, they couldn't entirely rule out the possibility right away. They wanted to look into Sherry's murder to make sure they were covering all of their bases. And just over a week later, the Pennsylvania State Police did conclude that there was no connection between Charlotte and Sherry's murders. I do want to take a second to mention that, unfortunately, Sherry's murder, just like Charlotte's, remains unsolved to this day. I also want to point out that there's multiple unsolved murders involving real estate agents. We mentioned Charlotte, we mentioned Sherry, there's also Lindsay Buziak, just to name a few. And I think what we have here is a situation, and anybody who's bought a home or sold a home or who works in the real estate industry or just, I don't even, just watches TV, real estate agents are in a really difficult position because they're obviously trying to sell as many homes as possible. And I don't work in the field, but from what I understand, it's a competitive industry and people are working for themselves. So when you get a lead, you want to meet the client, you want to make the sale, and you want to earn that commission. So I feel like it really is this individual sport, if you will. So in a lot of cases, these realtors are going out and meeting individuals that they do not know personally, they've never vetted them, and they're finding themselves in a home that they're not too familiar with this individual or maybe multiple individuals that they've never met before. And in a perfect utopian world, you should be perfectly fine. But unfortunately, we all know that's just not the case these days. Now, to get back to Charlotte's case, following the updates that I just laid out, reporting on Charlotte's case really slowed down with no new information from police for weeks. On October 11th, it had been a month since Charlotte's murder, and the police decided to share an update with the Morning Call, saying that they had been back to the neighborhood where Charlotte was killed multiple times. They went on to state that they spent the day stopping drivers in the area, asking if they noticed anything strange on the afternoon of September 11th. They also conducted physical searches, with the state police flying over the home on Chelsea Lane in a helicopter and dozens of troopers combing through the nearby field and woods. Now, this is extremely important because if it hadn't been done, this is something I would have brought up in my perspective, but I think obviously this is the right move. You got to go back to the area. You got to ask questions because you never know. It may be a neighbor who's a little oblivious to what's going on around them, and it may take you initiating that interview where you say, hey, did anything stand out to you on that day around that time? And they may say, no, nothing stood out to me. I mean, there were two cars in the driveway, but it wasn't anything suspicious. Now, to them, it wasn't suspicious, but to you, when they give descriptors of those vehicles, you as the investigator may say, okay, they're describing Charlotte's vehicle, but they're also describing another vehicle that wasn't there when we got there. That's obviously very important. So that's why it's important to go out there and try to pull information from the surrounding neighborhood, because you never know what you're going to find. And as far as the searches are concerned, that's extremely important as well. Listen, we don't know how this client arrived. Did they arrive in a vehicle? Maybe. Did they arrive on foot? Also possible. And if they did, what route did they take to leave the property? Did they go right out the front door, get in their car, and drive away? It's possible. It's risky, but it's possible. They also could have decided to escape through the back door, out through the woods, and during their escape, could they have dropped something? Listen, it wouldn't be the first time that it's happened. It's happened to me, where we find a stolen vehicle after the fact, and as we're going through the stolen vehicle to grab anything that may be of evidentiary value, I've literally found the ID of the person who stole the vehicle. It's happened. So Is it a common thing? No, but it's very possible that while the troopers were combing the woods, maybe they find something, a piece of clothing, an item that's personal in nature, a piece of jewelry, something that they can put into storage, put into evidence. And if down the road they find a suspect, maybe they can tie that piece of evidence back to that person. Listen, I think it's fair to say that we can all admit that not all podcasts are created equal. And it's difficult to find a true crime podcast that I enjoy. I'm very selective and I have different reasons for listening or watching different podcasts. If you're someone who can't get enough true crime and is always looking for a new show to add to your roster, but having trouble finding a podcast that has everything you love, like wild stories, mystery, twists and turns, and most importantly, a good dynamic between hosts, I think I might have the show for you. I just started this new show and it has everything that I was looking for at the time, but it's a little different than anything else that I have in my current podcast lineup. So I was getting in the car for this long drive and I wanted to listen to a good true crime podcast, but all the other shows that I listened to, there was no new episode. So I was looking for something new, something that had a lot of mystery, a lot of twists and turns. And then I remembered that there was this show, The Dating Detectives, that I had recently seen added to my library, but hadn't listened to yet. And listen, once I started listening to the show, I knew that I made the right choice and I was really glad that I did. So let's talk about the show. It's called The Dating Detectives and it's hosted by a real-life private investigator. You may know one or two of those, right? And it's also hosted by a hilarious comedian. In every episode, instead of murder cases, they dive into the wild and deceptive world of dating. I actually just listened to an episode where a man created a fake best friend using an online profile and a burner phone and then use that catfish that he created to con and then track his girlfriend. Really crazy stuff. And there, like I said, there is a true crime element to it, but there is humor sprinkled throughout it. Some of these stories are absolutely wild, but it's not all serious business. Yes, they are dissecting these stories, but there's also a touch of humor and a lot of detective work. It's the kind of podcast where one second you'll find yourself laughing and the next second you're shocked, which I like. It keeps you on your toes. If you're craving something that combines the thrill of true crime with the complexities of modern dating, The Dating Detectives is your next must listen. You can listen to The Dating Detectives on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search The Dating Detectives on your favorite podcast platform. Now, in this update, the police also shared that they still didn't know who the person was that Charlotte was showing the house to, and they still didn't know if this was a stranger or someone she personally knew. They continued to focus on Charlotte's life, going through her personal documents and talking to her friends, family, and colleagues, hoping to find a lead there. They were also going over lab reports and forensic tests, but they wouldn't go into any more detail as they didn't want to interfere with the ongoing investigation. In mid-December, it had been 3 months since Charlotte's murder, and the police decided to announce to the morning call that they had ruled out Charlotte's husband and any family as potential suspects. They were still considering various theories about what might have happened, but they had found no clear motive yet. One of the two troopers assigned to the case full-time said, quote, "From the very beginning, I've pretty much said it could have been related to her employment, her personal life, or random. There's nothing I can convey as conclusive one way or another." The trooper went on to say that although they were still gathering information, they hadn't received many tips from the public. Now, this is to be expected, to be honest with you. When you have a situation like this, where it appears on the surface, especially at this point, that they're ruling out family members at least, this could be a random act of violence. And I've actually said this in other cases, but when the offender has no connection to the victim, the cases are extremely difficult. And I don't know the exact data or specifics on it, but I would imagine that a lot of the unsolved homicides we have involve individuals who were killed by someone they didn't know. And that's where police are having a difficult time reverse engineering the case. So when you have a situation like this where it was a very controlled environment in a lot of ways, where the individual calls, Charlotte responds to the house, they're inside the home, no one can see what happens. It's a very small window where the offender can be seen coming or going from the property. They do what they do inside, and then they're gone within minutes. So unless a neighbor was driving by or right outside cutting their lawn at that very moment, no one's really going to have eyes on this individual. And that makes it an extremely difficult case to solve. And if this person, the person responsible, is not bragging about what they're doing or talking to anybody about what happened, there's really a small opportunity that someone's going to come forward with something that's going to turn out to be fruitful for the investigation. Now, in the spring of 1998, the Pennsylvania State Police looked into a lead in New Jersey after learning about a man who was calling offices targeting women with light-colored hair whose pictures had appeared in real estate magazines. According to the Asbury Park Press, the man, who sounded well-educated and polite, would introduce himself as Steve Grummet or John Barnett, claiming to work for Conrail or New Jersey Transit, living in Short Hills with his mom. The man would say he had recently come into a lot of money and was searching for a home in the $250,000 to $300,000 range, and sometimes he requested to see specific homes, often in secluded areas. He made appointments with agents, but he never showed up for any of them, and he'd give phone numbers that traced back to public phones in South Orange, New Jersey. After hearing about the caller, the Pennsylvania State Police thought he might be linked to Charlotte's case, so they got a search warrant for his apartment in South Orange, where he lived with his parents. When the police arrived to search the apartment, the caller spoke with them willingly and he confessed to making the calls, but also stated he wasn't in the position to actually buy a house at that time. He just enjoyed chatting with the female agents, and it was nothing more than that. The caller's house was still searched, but the police didn't find anything connecting him to Charlotte's murder. They later told the Asbury Park Press that they did not think he was the killer. Now, what was interesting is that the police went on to explain that during their investigation, they learned a very troubling fact, which was that a lot of men were actually calling female real estate agents after seeing their pictures in ads. So this makes it very difficult for the investigation when you have so many reports of this and you're trying to identify a specific individual. You have all these men out there who are conducting this extremely inappropriate behavior. So when you're trying to narrow down the pool and there's so many men out there doing this, it can obviously complicate the investigation. Now, in September of 1998, it had been 1 year since Charlotte was murdered. The police gave an update to the morning call saying they had conducted 300 to 400 interviews, but they hadn't obtained many helpful leads and they still didn't have any suspects. One trooper said, quote, "I think the news media and the public think we need an arrest in a week. In fact, that is very far from the truth. Time is on our side. We won't rush this investigation because the arena we work in is very unforgiving." Now, I will say there's parts of this quote that are very, very true. Our arena is very unforgiving, and if we get it wrong, we're talking about someone's freedom, someone's livelihood, and people will hold you accountable for that, as they should. So we got to get it right, and in most cases, that can take time. Sometimes it's only days, sometimes it's weeks, and then sometimes it's months, and unfortunately, sometimes it's years, and let's just be honest, sometimes it's never. And I hate to say that, but it's the truth, and we know that's the truth, or I wouldn't be here doing what I'm doing right now. And I do think that some of the public can be reprogrammed in an inaccurate way where they see a television show that's 40 minutes long and you get this big murder at the top of the show. And within that episode, they solve it with just some crazy piece of technology or science behind it. And does that happen? Yeah, rarely it happens, but it's not the norm. And I do think that when we see it on TV and in movies all the time, it can give us the impression that that's how it works in the real world. And unfortunately, as much as I wish it was, that's just not the case. Now, for the next 9 years, there were hardly any articles written about Charlotte's murder. And eventually, the realtor's office stopped offering the $100,000 reward. In September of 2007, a full decade had passed since Charlotte was killed. The lead trooper on the case told the morning call that they were still actively investigating Charlotte's case. He didn't want to discuss the possible motives, but he said he remained confident the case would be solved. Charlotte's sister Bernadette also spoke to the morning call about the loss of Charlotte. She said, quote, "A death like hers is bad enough, but all this time of not knowing, it's awful." Bernadette mentioned how people still asked her who could have killed Charlotte. She had no idea. She couldn't think of a single person who would want to hurt her sister. This led her to believe that Charlotte's murder was random. She explained, quote, "If you knew her, you wouldn't be able to understand how anyone would want to hurt her." A year and a half later, in February of 2009, Charlotte's autopsy report was made public. For the first time, it was disclosed that she had been shot twice in the head, once in her face at close range just below her right eye, and once in the back of the head with a small caliber bullet. The report also stated that Charlotte was strangled with a spiral cord, possibly from a telephone, and that she was found fully clothed with her coat still on, and that her estimated time of death was between noon and 3 p.m. After the autopsy report came out, Charlotte's daughter, Christy, spoke to the media for the very first time. She told Lehigh Valley Live that she didn't know the details from the autopsy report until they were publicly released. She said, quote, "I wish it wouldn't have surfaced like it has with the autopsy report, but at this point, anything is good. I just find it hard to believe with what was just found out that there couldn't have been any evidence or any clues or anything like that. If this gets people talking about the case, at this point, it's good." Christy also mentioned that she hadn't heard from the police in about 5 or 6 years. She said, quote, "You just put everything in the hands of the police department and hope they're doing their job. They said they'd call us if they'd find anything, and we haven't heard anything." Christy said she still didn't know who killed her mom or why they would do such a thing, but she remained hopeful for answers. That same month, the police spoke to Lehigh Valley Live and disclosed that the case was being reviewed by the State Police Criminal Investigative Assessment Unit. They said, quote, "It's a very unusual case. When you look at this case, there's not one stone unturned. There's not one issue involving the quality of the investigators or the quality of the forensic science involved." Now, unfortunately, there haven't been any major updates in the case since that last one, and September of 2022 marked the 25th anniversary of Charlotte's murder. Now, at that time, the police said they were still actively investigating the case. And as we sit here today, we know that this case is still unsolved, and we know that Charlotte's family hasn't spoken much to the media, but what we do know is that they're desperate for answers and they're still looking for Charlotte's killer. All right, so let's dive into the perspective. And I know I say this all the time, but this will be a quick one because I really do believe that the state police did a very thorough job with this investigation. I do believe that they tried everything they could. But as I had said earlier in the episode, it does appear to me that this incident was a random act of violence. I believe the offender was looking for a victim of opportunity. So they called around, maybe this wasn't even the first time, but they called around to different real estate agencies and they would set up these appointments and they would be off in the distance watching to see who arrived. And what I believed happened is the first time that Charlotte showed up, the offender was there. They saw who arrived. They saw that Charlotte was alone. They waited a couple minutes to make sure that no one else would show up. They let Charlotte leave. And as soon as they saw her leaving the premise and going back to the office, they waited a few moments and then they called again. And when they got Charlotte again and they knew that she was going to be the one responding, the next time they felt safe to enter the property. So they were setting up a little intelligence beforehand to see if Charlotte showed up by herself, her stature, you know, what the surrounding area was, how active it was. And they clearly felt comfortable enough to call back. And when Charlotte showed up the second time, that's obviously when she was murdered. And as I said earlier, she probably walked in the door, jacket still on. This person asks a question about something in the distance. She turns her back to them, and that's when she's caught off guard and she's attacked. And we know the rest. As for shooting her twice in the head, as I said earlier, it's weird to me. I don't really understand that part completely. This could be a situation where this individual had planned this out for a long time in their head and maybe even dreamt about what it would be like. And after strangling Charlotte, maybe she was already deceased, maybe she was unconscious, but they went there with a gun with the intention on using it because that was something they wanted to experience. They wanted to see what it would be like to shoot another human being. And unfortunately, Charlotte was the victim of that. Where I leave this episode is asking myself, was she the first victim of many? Was she the middle of this whole story where this person had done this before multiple times and maybe they had done it afterwards? It could have been anywhere in the country. We really don't know. And I think that if there were connections throughout the country, the Pennsylvania State Police, if possible, would have followed up on those leads as well. And we don't know if they did or not. They haven't said it publicly, but there's a strong possibility that they have been monitoring cases throughout the country that could be a similar MO to Charlotte's case. But unfortunately, they haven't found a connection. Why that is, it could be for a few reasons. This individual could be deceased. This individual could have been arrested on an unrelated crime and be in the prison system. Or this person could have conducted this one act, felt like they got away with it and didn't want to risk doing it again, and have gone on to live their life just as a normal citizen walking amongst us, knowing what they did to Charlotte. And that's really unfortunate, but it's a strong possibility. So what can you take from this case? Well, if you're a real estate agent, number one, I do think it's a good practice to have the individual come to the office first so that you can get an ID, you can get a name, a phone number. They can be seen by multiple individuals, and with today's technology, more than likely be caught on camera as well. This, again, would all serve as deterrence for the individual to want to use this type of process to find a victim. There's just too many opportunities for them to be caught on camera or to be seen by a witness. So if that was the process that was in place at your agency, whether it's real estate, insurance, whatever it might be, if you had this type of vetting, more than likely the offender wouldn't choose your place of business. Personally, whenever we're meeting new people, whether it's in business or whether it's for personal reasons, you just got to go in there with a level of apprehension that allows you to still be sociable, but also aware of the world we live in and what we're dealing with these days. You just don't know who's around you or what their intentions are. And I'm not saying that I want you to go out there and be frightened on a daily basis. I just want you to be cognizant of your surroundings. And I want you to do your best to put yourselves in positions where you're not susceptible to a crime of this nature. And nothing's 100% guaranteed, but we can do small, minor things to decrease the likelihood that if there is an offender in our surrounding area, you're less likely to be chosen. And little things like not having your headphones in, not going into an establishment or an area that's secluded with another individual by yourself, making sure that you have your phone on or making sure that there's someone else accessible if you need to contact them immediately. And if you are going to have to meet with someone who is not very familiar to you, make sure you have all of their information and you vet them as much as you can before interacting with them on a personal level in a situation where if they wanted to do something, they could, and there wouldn't be much you could do about it at that point. Again, there's no guarantees. Nothing in life is guaranteed. I could walk out of here tonight and something could happen to me, even though I'm sitting here preaching this to you. All we can do is try to decrease the likelihood. That's all we can do. And if we do that to the best of our ability, you're not going to really have a ton of regret. And that's what I preach to myself every day and also to the people that I care about. Just take those extra precautions. In a lot of situations, it only takes a few extra seconds, but just do what you can to equip yourself with the things you need to prevent people from seeing you as someone who would be easily overcome, or to see you as someone where if they did do something to you, no one would be around to witness it. Those are the two things I would try to avoid as much as I could. And I will tell you, I don't talk about it all the time, but that's what a lot of these cases are about. When you ask yourself, why do we cover these cases? Yes, they're unsolved, and we want to give answers to the families. They deserve it, and the victims deserve it. But at minimum, these are all lessons to be learned. We can take these tragedies and apply them to our own lives. And I think that's one of the most fascinating and critical parts of true crime that a lot of people overlook. there are things that we can take from these cases almost like a course or a class on self-defense, where we can see what offenders have done in the past, who they have preyed on, and we can learn from those experiences to better equip ourselves. And if you're not doing that when listening to these cases, then you're doing yourself a disservice. But in saying all that, we are here to talk about Charlotte and her case. And although it's been a long time, I am always hopeful that someone who's watching or listening to this will know someone or think of something that may be helpful in this investigation. So just to recap, on the afternoon of September 11th, 1997, Charlotte Fimiano was murdered in a vacant house for sale in the 2100 block of Chelsea Lane in Lower Saucon Township, Pennsylvania. She was shot twice with a small caliber gun and strangled with a spiral cord. She wasn't discovered until the following morning. And if you have any information in this case, please call Pennsylvania Crime Stoppers at 1-800-472-8477. You may be eligible for a reward. And as for Charlotte's friends and family, I want to send my thoughts out to you guys. I know we haven't heard much from you over the years, and I actually think that's a great decision and for the best. I know we heard from Christy a little bit, and I'm glad to see that she was able to come out and speak publicly and she was okay with that. And I also hope that behind the scenes, although she's never forgotten about her mother, she has been able to go on in her life and maybe start her own family or do something that she's passionate about while still thinking about her mom. That's always the hope for these families, because in a lot of cases, their life stops when their loved one's life stops. But I'm hoping that she has been able to find some peace in these 25 years, knowing that anyone who knew her mother had nothing but positive things to say about her. And I'm sure that those traits were passed down to Christy. So we're thinking of you guys. We're always going to keep fighting for you. And we really hope that one day I'm giving an update in this case, and it's to say that Charlotte's murderer has been caught. Until then, everyone stay safe out there, and I'll see you next week.